There's a quote by Suzuki Roshi that has always resonated with me. And many of you have heard this. Each of us is perfect the way we are, and we can all use a little improvement. And, when we connect with our own stillness, with our inner stillness, with our unconditional love, with moments of peace, we can relate to the perfection within us. And then nothing's needed. And when we become aware of any dissatisfaction or any suffering in our lives arising, instead of dwelling on it and adding to it with resistance, it can point to that possibility of improvement. When we clearly see that process of dissatisfaction, it can lead to a heart that's free from the dissatisfaction. And that's the forward-leading nature of the path. It's when we see the dukkha, the suffering, the dissatisfaction, and we turn towards it and see it really clearly. That's what allows for freedom. I recently heard someone reflect on his relationship with his child. I think she was like maybe 9 years old. He said his love for his daughter was perfect. He just saw her as perfect. It didn't matter what she did. He loved her fully, even when she was bratty or misbehaved. He just saw her as this perfect human being. But he realized he still had to teach her how to live her life well, to grow up and be responsible, to help her improve, to learn how to respect other people, to keep her word, to care for herself. And the reason he taught her how to live her life well was to protect her from suffering, the suffering that arises from her own unskillful actions. Not because there's something wrong with her, but because she needs to know these things to protect her from suffering. And this attitude of unconditional love we can have for a child, we can have for ourselves, even if we touch into it only for a moment here and there. This practice calls for us, to have a radical acceptance of all of who we are, with nothing left out, every part of us. And the brat within, the naughty little kid, all of it. And this creates the wise attitude of practice. There's nothing to fix, even if for experience is that of being unsettled. We don't need to wait for a better moment. This too belongs. This is the path. We can allow the path to unfold the way it does naturally, when what is seen is that ways we cling, the ways we cause our own suffering, we can see it clearly with kindness and allow it to come and go. In one way, the improvement that Suzuki Roshi talks about, it's really the persistent kind of effort we make on this path to free ourselves from dissatisfaction, from suffering. In in Taoism, there's a saying, the way never acts, yet nothing is left undone. So the way never acts, yet nothing is left undone. It refers to the Wu Wei, the Chinese word for non-doing. Now, non-doing doesn't mean not acting. It actually points more to an effortless action. It points to the stillness of mind we can have while doing an activity. For instance, if you're juggling, juggling some balls, if the mind isn't still, the balls fall pretty quickly. So it's that stillness you can have within activity or within non-activity also. For many years, I jogged every day, you know, and at some point the mind would quiet and the jog would become effortless. You know, I later learned it was called entering the zone. And many of you have heard that in different things you've done. And what happens at times in meditation, we're not trying to be aware, not efforting to come back to the present. We're not practicing, but awareness is doing it all by itself. We're in the flow. I read an interview of one of the marathon monks of Japan. You know, they do this outrageous endurance thing where they run for 50 miles a day for 100 days. Now, it's pretty intense, you know, and he was the last person who accomplished it. Not too many people have done this. There's a lot more to it, but that's impressive enough. So he was asked how he did it. And he said that at every point, he made sure he only used the muscles and thoughts that were needed, relaxing the rest, nothing extra. This can point to the quality of non-doing in our daily lives, to the ease of getting things done when we don't add unnecessary pressure to ourselves. You know, I've often referred to them, what I call the tyranny of our to-do lists. I don't know how many of you have these lists, these never-ending lists, that for some reason they're always there. And, you know, just that they exist undone every day can feel like a mental weight to some of us who haven't learned to work with that. You know, originally they were meant to be a tool to help us. And, but when we feel that mental weight, it drains our energy instead of inspires us. And just like other tools, you know, if we use a drill as a tool occasionally, drills are great. They're wonderful tools. But not if we carry it around all day, you know, going to the bathroom, carrying this drill around, you know, going to the cooking breakfast, you know. You know, we don't need to disperse our energy with carrying all this stuff around in our minds, unhelpful ideas and judgments and thoughts. In both our meditation and our daily lives, the idea of non-doing can mean not doing anything extra. What's extra? You know, we're sitting here, there's some discomfort. You know, what's extra? You know, the resistance to the discomfort, letting go of unnecessary judgments. You know, not trying to make ourselves be what we're not, but relaxing fully into how we are now. I spent way too much of my meditation trying to change how I was, you know, trying to be somewhere else. Yeah. But just in that non-action, the act of non-action, wholesome change follows. It actually allows our own wisdom to naturally continue to unfold. You know, there's no need to force the river. It just kind of flows on its own. The way never acts, yet nothing is left undone. It points to the ideas of, you know, not forcing action, forcing change, forcing accomplishment. It might also take doing less. Sometimes we, you know, I had this idea, this, you know, in the 70s, we used to talk about this superwoman syndrome, where you had to kind of be good at everything. You know, and you kind of, you know, and I just filled my life with more and more and more and more. And sometimes, we actually have to do less, even less of good things, just to allow the flow to move through us easily. And Taoism, they recommend cultivating non-action by observing the natural world. We think of water as receptive and maybe even passive. You throw a pebble in the lake and it just sinks in gradually. But then we see the power of water over time in streams and rivers. They change the earth beneath it. They smooth wood, they even smooth stone over the years. They shape canyons. And as we refine our practice, even doing parts of meditation can be done with minimal doing. And the less we do in some ways, the more it can bring the mind to this effortless effort, which is a state of flow. The zone, it seems to arise naturally when we're engaged fully in what we're doing without added stress. It arises in meditation when we're fully engaged. If we're holding back, it's, then we're not in harmony with it. It can arise in any activity when we're deeply engaged and connected. When we touch upon the stillness in the midst of change, and the feeling of connection, this returning to our heart, to our home, just this one moment. When awareness is continuous, then there's flow. It just does itself. And this practice can be seen as a dance between doing and non-doing. When the mind is at ease and aware, there's nothing to do. And we often want, even look at that moment and, okay, what should I be doing here? When the mind is caught by desire or aversion, we can direct the attention to see it clearly, to get to know it. And in an easeful way to allow it to release itself. We tend to have a doing bias, especially in this culture, because it's often easy to see the effects of doing. So there's a tendency to think there's always something that needs doing and that there's something better just around the corner or the future when we do enough. But the practice is always here, just here. And it's being at ease with wherever and however we are, and not waiting for something better, just allowing the Dharma to unfold, just allowing for the flower bud to open by itself in its own time. So thank you. And thank you just so much for your practice, for sharing this day with all of us. And I'd like to end with a dedication of benefit, which is the traditional way we end our retreats. May all the goodness that has arisen in this beautiful day of practicing together, may it spread to include all those beings whose lives we touch, all those we may meet in person, known and unknown, all those we communicate with by phone, by video, by email, by text. May all the goodness spread to all living beings, wherever they are, in the sky, on the earth, within the earth and in the oceans, or sitting next to us in the living room. May that goodness spread outward to help this beautiful planet and for all beings to be free. So thank you.